Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. If we haven't met yet, then my name is Claire. I'm a registered nutritionist and I also hold a qualification in exercise science. That's my other degree, natural fertility education and functional medicine. And I have PCOS too, so I know how damn frustrating these symptoms can be. But I also know after 10 years or more of trial and error, how good it can be on the other side when most of those symptoms are in remission and I'm no longer without a period for 3 years, right? Like I have ovulated now every month for the last 5 years. I also know what it's like to not have to deal with acne or unexplained weight gain. For the first time in my life, being able to maintain my weight without really thinking about it. And for you, those symptoms might be facial body hair growth or hair loss. Fatigue was another one that I struggled with. And so many other things that people don't talk about, like blood sugar crashes and severe sugar cravings. Or maybe it's feeling like you need to sleep forever to ever feel refreshed. So my philosophy is that PCOS is a condition that is a combination of your genetics and environment not playing nicely together. Now, PCOS is a genetically driven condition, right? We have the genes that predispose us to PCOS, but your genes don't determine your future or don't determine or aren't guaranteed to determine your future. It's really a matter of the environment has to turn those genes on to make them present. So equally though, we can turn those genes off and not get those symptoms. So what I want to find out is what's affecting your, or what's driving your PCOS. So what systems in your body are not functioning optimally that are causing your body to have these symptoms? And there are a few things that the research shows can really drive this. The main one is blood sugar and our hormone insulin, which controls our blood sugar. The next most common is our stress hormones. The third most common is a thyroid condition and then chronic inflammation, or it can be some other causes as well, but those are really the main things. So for me, and when I work with my patients, the most important thing is to find out what's driving that for you, because then we can then have very specific lifestyle changes that are actually going to work. We're no longer just jumping from diet to diet, hoping that something will work, right? We know what the problem is and we can then put together a solution, right? It's like going to your mechanic and, you know, if you went to your mechanic and said, hey, my car's not starting, you know, if they said to you, we'll order a different motor. And you're like, sorry, excuse me? Like, have you even tried turning it on? Have you looked at it? Have you figured out what could be causing it? And they're like, no, we'll just buy a new motor and see if that works. And you're like, hold on, that's a really expensive way to go about fixing my car. You wouldn't accept that, right? You'd go, right, well, figure out what's going wrong. And that's the same thing as we need to do with our PCOS. We need to figure out first what's going wrong before we can put the right plan in place. Otherwise, we're just using a scattergun approach and hoping that something works. And I think this is something that we don't understand or haven't really thought about, is that changing our lifestyle, like slightly tweaking what we eat or maybe how we move or the vitamins and minerals in our body or how much we sleep, can have a dramatic impact on the way that our hormones work. But if we don't know what to focus on, then we're so scattered and we're just trying to do everything, which is just either not achievable or not sustainable. So this is the way that I work with you in helping you understand what are the most important things you should be doing. And that really is only four or five things. It's not changing your entire lifestyle and diet and getting you to cut out every possible food group under the sun or setting up with unrealistic training expectations where you have to exercise 4 hours a day. You don't have to do that and to see success and see results. And actually people that do tend to do those things like cutting out massive food groups or training 4 hours a day often find that their symptoms get worse because they're so tired and so grumpy that they can't stick with any changes. So I help you through my program, the PCOS Protocol, and this is something that's it's not just a PDF we send you. This is a program that I work with you on. So I'm there every week answering questions from you, doing live calls with you, trying to personalize and change things that you have the maximum effect while we understand what's driving this for you and what changes you need to make. So that's a bit about me and a bit about us. And let's get into the topic for today, though, because that is what you are here for. So today, in today's podcast, we're going to be talking all about training for your cycle and questions mm-hmm. around training, because it's something that has cropped up on our Instagram stories a few times.
Yeah.
Now, I share a bit about how I do this on my Instagram stories, so I'll always share if I'm in a heavy training phase when I'm like part of my cycle where I'm going hard and trying mm-hmm. to increase my strength, and then when I'm going a bit lighter and because I'm in a part of my cycle that is not conducive to performance gains, and when I'm just giving myself a bit of a deload week. Mm. And we had lots of people commenting and be like, cool, I want to know more about this. How do I do this?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic. And I think a lot of people don't really think about the fact that your training does change throughout your cycle, and mm-hmm. you might not have like the energy or as much of an ability to hit PBs and just like move in certain ways at different parts of your cycle. So it's a really interesting topic to cover for sure.
Yeah, and while I wouldn't say it's necessary for everybody, it can be really helpful to understand why you might feel really low energy some weeks, you know, why you might go to the gym and you can only squat 20 kilos whereas normally you can easily squat 40 kilos.
Yeah,
and I think it just helps us stop feeling like a failure, or that we're just lacking motivation that day, or we're just weak, you know, and we can't push ourselves.
Regressed on the progress that we've made, for sure.
Yeah. So when you understand about, well, where am I in my cycle, and is this potentially affecting how I'm feeling, then often that can take away a lot of that mental battle that goes on in our head about, as you said, why am I regressing, or why am I so weak today, or why can't I push myself today when
or
I can?
Or why do I not feel like going to the gym right now?
Yeah, am I just lazy? Have I just suddenly become lazy this week, when actually all the other weeks I know I'm not?
Mm.
And this is something that's being used more and more in women's sport as well, and helping elite female athletes to compete their best. And I know the US female football team, or in many parts of the world it's called soccer, I don't know, many parts of the world, New Zealand maybe is the only place, football team too, and they actually won the last world champs, I'm pretty sure. And they have been using this as part of their training. I know that also Dame Valerie Adams, who's a New Zealand Olympic gold medalist, she's also using this in her training for the Tokyo Olympics to hopefully reach a new PB and gold medal in that as well. So it is being more and more researched, and this is something that's previously been really under-researched because when it comes to females, unfortunately, we are treated, like Dr. Stacey Sims says, as small men when it comes to research. Most of the research is done on men, especially college-aged males, and then extrapolated to account for female variances. But the reason that they do this is because actually researching females can be tricky, right? Because if you are researching females that are at different times of their cycles, then they could be getting different responses, and there's a lot for a researcher to factor in. So they often go for males or postmenopausal female, because again, we can reduce all of that complexity out. So let's get into it and talk about what I mean by actually training with your cycle. So this means is that there is different hormones being produced during your menstrual cycle, and they can affect your performance. So in a normal cycle, which is about 23 days to 33 days in length, where you ovulate, then your body should be producing from the first day of your period until around about day 14 to day 18. It can be varied depending on you then ovulate, and then for the following days from the day that you ovulate until you get your period, you are then producing mostly progesterone, much less estrogen. And these are two very important hormones that can control how we recover and how we can push ourselves. Now, in that phase, so if you look, if you just Google now, woman's menstrual cycle, it might give you a refresher, and you can see what I'm saying there about how you have this phase of estrogen rising, and then you have the spike in luteinizing hormone when you ovulate, and then you have this progesterone rising. It'll all say that women produce estrogen for 14 days, and then they ovulate, and then they produce progesterone for 14 days. That only happens for about 10% of the population. Yeah. Okay, so if you
oversimplify,
if you don't ovulate on day 14, that is completely normal. Okay, so but if you have a menstrual cycle length, so a full cycle length of about 23 to 33 days, then you will be producing estrogen for roughly half the cycle and progesterone for roughly half the cycle. But what it doesn't show you on those graphs is that you actually produce about 100 times more estrogen than what you do progesterone. So we can think about it like two phases of our cycle. Our really high hormone phase, which is the days between when you get your first day of your period until you ovulate, right? So that would be the first phase of your cycle, and that is your high hormone phase, because think about it, you're producing 100 times more hormones then than what you are in the following, you know, following 14 days ish until you get your period. We will talk about it in a minute about how this works if you've got a regular cycle. So if your cycle is 35 40 55 60 70 90 days long, right? I'll get to that in a second, but this is just to, you know, to give you a good idea first. So what this means is that when you are in that high hormone phase, this is when you feel really good. This is when you can sprint faster than you have. You can lift more than you have. This is when you are going to get your strength gains, your personal bests or personal records. You're going to feel really strong and really good, right? Whereas in your low hormone phase, this is when you're not going to feel so good. So this is where you're going to potentially not be getting those PBs. You're probably better off taking a step back and having a deload week or a rest week. Now, what you might notice from this is that that first half of the cycle includes the week of your period.
Yeah, most people, I think, oh, I'm on my period, like I'm so tired, I can't, like don't have the energy to do anything, and you kind of cocoon a little bit. But from what you've just said, that's obviously not necessarily the case.
No, so this can be, and this is something when I was competing, it was like the worst thing possible if you got your period when you were due to be racing. And actually that's not the case at all. Actually, many women have actually broken world records or Olympic records on their period. So we know that it's actually, and because they're producing so many more hormones to help them with that. So just because you have your period doesn't mean that you will feel terrible exercising. And actually many people feel really good, even if they do get, you know, cramps and pain with their period. Sometimes that can, exercising can actually be a really good thing to do when they've got their period. But we will talk a little bit about, you know, for those of you that do get really horrible, painful periods, maybe for the first, you know, day or so, yeah, you can't do anything strenuous, and that's okay. But it might be that once those first couple of days have passed, then you find that actually you know, you can train really well, as opposed to thinking, I have to wait for my period to finish before I can then go back and exercise, which...
And then you've only got like a week or so before you ovulate, and then it's like, oh, I don't have the energy because I'm in that like lower hormonal phase.
Totally. So what can be a really good idea in terms of periodizing your training is to, from day one of your period, if your symptoms are okay, and or if you feel really good training even when you've got your period, is to use those first 2 weeks from day one of your period until you ovulate to really try and push your training. So this is when you're going to try and, if you're doing strength training, you know, lift heavier weights or more reps or do whatever you can to really try and push your body so you get some performance gains. And if you are, you know, trying to improve your insulin sensitivity, this would be a really good time to try and do that. This is when you hear about people talking about progressive overload, which is, progressive overload is really, you've got to do something different to make your body adapt.
Yeah.
Like if you just lifted a 10 kilo barbell for the rest of your life, the first couple of weeks you're going to be really sore because your body's never...
Yeah, never done that. You're adjusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to grow more red blood cells. I'm going to have to grow more muscle fibers to cope with this extra load that she's making me do. And I don't want to be ill-prepared next time. So I'm going to try and grow stronger to so that when she makes me do this again, I'm ready for it. But after it's gotten over that stress, it will then plateau because it's like, oh, I can lift this 10 kilo barbell without any change.
Yeah, adapted.
Yeah, I'm already adapted to that, so I don't need to change. And really, our body's pretty lazy, right? Like, we won't put energy into changing unless we're forced to. Mm-hmm. So if you just do that, then you won't progress any further. So you've got to try and, you know, push your body to actually want to change. So whether that's you might have lifted the 10 kilo barbell for 20 repetitions previously, now you might do 15 or 20, right? That's gonna be progressive overload because you're making it do more. Or you might increase that to 15 reps. Mm-hmm. Or you might now be, previously you were stepping up onto a small step and now you're stepping up onto a medium-sized step.
Mm-hmm.
Right, stressing it to do something that hasn't had to do before. And so this, the, you know, the 2 weeks between your, or maybe it's slightly more than 2 weeks for you, but the weeks between when day one of your period and then when you ovulate, that is the time you're going to be able to do that.
Mm.
Then the week after you ovulate, and if you want to know more about when you're ovulating in your cycle, I outlined this in our mini course, Educated, which you can find, there's a link in the show notes, or it's just educated.com. That's EGGDUCATED.com. And, or in my book, Getting Pregnant with PCOS, chapter 9 is all about how to track your cycle so you know when you're ovulating. Please don't use apps such as Clue and Flow and other apps where you just put in your period and it says you are ovulating. They are like
wildly inaccurate, guys.
Yeah, I think the research shows about 60% accurate. Yeah. So yeah, wildly inaccurate. So if you want to know more about that, you can find out there. But once you do know, or maybe you just estimate it and that's okay for training, but just don't use it for contraception. Then once you've got that, then you can, the week or so after you have ovulated would really be a time to, you're not trying to increase your strength or power. So maybe for you, it's not about lifting weights, but maybe you're trying to sprint faster, whether that's, you know, running, or whether that's just walking, or whether that's cycling or swimming or whatever you're trying to achieve. And you're, instead of trying to increase that power output, you might be focusing more on endurance. So you can generally still, in the week or so after you've ovulated, still feel okay and still able to maintain some exercise. But it would then be the week prior to your period where things really go downhill. So your hormones basically drop off a cliff and you'll likely feel really tired really easily. You may struggle with motivation to actually do any exercise. You might feel really weak, or you find that you tire really, really quickly, or you don't recover very well from exercise. So this is where you want to be factoring in your rest weeks. Or it doesn't have to be complete rest, but it might be that you focus more on like lower intensity exercise or shorter sessions, or doing some yoga or other type, you know, more focusing on stretching or mobility or other exercise there. So you can still get some, you know, still keep up doing something that you feel like, but it's not going to completely wipe you out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So let's get into answering some of the questions. We had a few questions from a few of you that follow us. And Moni was the first one that we saw, and her question was, why at certain times in my cycle do I feel like I'm getting so lightheaded, like to the point where I have to stop training?
So I think, Moni, that would be if you started tracking now your, when you feel like that, what I'd say is that you will likely feel like that the week before your period. And that's, as I said, because your hormones, because in the first 2 weeks of your cycle or so, you are having, or first phase of your cycle, you're producing 100 times more hormones than you are in the second half of your cycle. And so that week before your period is where your hormones will fall off a cliff and you just won't have the capacity to exercise the way that you normally would. So if you're still trying to, expecting your body to do a CrossFit session or
a grit class or something like
that. Yeah, grit or F45, and you're feeling super lightheaded, then it's probably because your hormones are low. If it's got nothing to do with your cycle, then it might be something else. Maybe it's blood sugar levels and you get really low blood sugar. So Molly, track it in like a period tracking app and just put in there whenever you feel this feeling, pop it in there, and then maybe after two or three cycles you might start to see a pattern. Or maybe you see the pattern immediately and be like, oh yeah, okay, this is what Claire was talking about. This is the week before my period and this is where I would feel... I'd feel shit, really. There's not really a better way to put it than just feeling like you really can't, do what you normally would be able to do. And this is why it can be an absolute mindfuck when you are just normally used to being able to, you know, feel motivated and want to go training or be able to keep up with everyone or... hit the normal weights that you would do or run the normal kilometer splits that you would normally do, and suddenly you can't and you're like, oh my god, am I regressing in my fitness or am I suddenly just have a person that has no motivation or I've got no self-discipline? And it's like, no, actually this is just that week.
Yeah, because I think it's a little bit of a vicious cycle when you're like not feeling motivated in that, what like we know is that last week before your period. And you're not feeling motivated, and then the fact that you're not feeling motivated makes you feel even less motivated. And you think, oh, is this in my head? But often, if it's cycle related, it's not.
It's definitely not. So that's why it can be a really good idea to, like, when you know that you're going to, you know, if you are lucky enough to have a cycle that you can predict, and again, I'm going to come to the... what I know is most of you are suffering from at the moment, which is irregular cycles, and we'll talk about how to manage those. But if you are getting a regular cycle and you do know when your period is coming, then you can bank in a rest week the week before your period so that you don't have to go through this mind mess of overthinking and then, you know, worrying about it. So that's a really good question.
I think also just quickly, there's a really great app, not sponsored, called Kindara, and you can track your symptoms alongside your period. I think a lot of period tracking apps do this, but you can also track basal body temperature and cervical fluid with that. So if you are tracking your cycle and you know when you're ovulating, you can see it on there. You can kind of build that training regime around that and get an idea of what your symptoms are like throughout your cycle so that you can pair that up with your training.
Yeah, totally. And if you're in a team sport or you have a coach, then this can still work. As I said, the US football, women's football team have done this, and how they actually did that, whether they completely all cycle synced, which is possible, or they used another form to try and ensure that they were really like in the first phase of their cycle for when their big competitions were on. I'm not sure exactly how they did it, but if you have in a team sport that, you know, is quite competitive, or you have a coach, then probably get them to read Dr. Stacey Sims' book Raw, which is all about how to train female and how to train around your menstrual cycle. Also really helpful for anyone that's an athlete, but I think sometimes it's hard if a coach has no understanding of female menstrual cycle and how it affects performance, and you're saying, hey, I need my rest week to be here, then, and they're going, why? No. That doesn't fit the rest of the team, or that doesn't fit my schedule. Then you can go, because of this reason, and you should read this. She also does, I think, a few webinars and stuff for coaches as well. So that would be a good thing to say to your, like, your coaches that, hey, because of this reason, go and maybe that you send them this podcast first, and then they from here go on and listen to Dr. Stacey Sims and figure out a bit more. And that's really what she does a lot of her her research in. So she's definitely the expert in this area.
Yeah, for sure. Clee Donovan wants to know when to do more and when to do less exercise throughout your cycle, which we've kind of covered a little bit. But
yeah. So just to reiterate, it would be push harder in the week from day one of your period until you ovulate, and then the week after you ovulate, that would be when you're probably doing a little bit maybe not trying to achieve the same kind of gains, but you're still kind of keeping up maybe the volume of exercise. And then the last week, which would be when we'd do less exercise or maybe just less intensity. So it might be that you're still training, but you're just, instead of trying to hit PRs when you're doing, say you're doing strength training, you might be going much less lower weights, but just higher, like a few higher reps, and just focusing on feeling the contraction and your technique. Or it might be that you just use that week to get outside and go walking, or go do fun things like go mountain biking, or maybe do some yoga, and we'll focus on your mobility instead.
And then Jordan wants to know, in terms of getting specific on best exercises to do in the different parts of your cycle, what can you kind of elaborate on the actual types of exercise that, say, those first 2 weeks that are the most beneficial to do? And then obviously we said the final week, something more restorative, but those first 2 weeks I think is really key for Jordan's question.
So I think there's not really any particular type, right? Like, it's more about intensity. So it depends on what you are doing and what you enjoy. So, but if, for example, you were wanting to improve your insulin sensitivity, and you've heard me talk about strength training and how that's really helpful, then the first 2 weeks would be when you're really wanting to try and get as many strength gains as possible. And then maybe the third week, if you have got a perfect 4 week cycle, or the week after ovulation, you might focus more on endurance and cardio. And then the fourth week would be, or the week before your period would be,
that deload week.
Yeah, the deload week. But in terms of, it doesn't mean that you have to do the different exercises at different times. Like, for example, I do the same exercises the whole way through my cycle. I just change the intensity. So I do 3 strength training sessions a week, and then 3 jogs where I jog walk for 45 minutes. And I'd still do that even in the fourth week. Sometimes I might only do 2 strength sessions, and then I might do a few more fun kind of exercise things, or I might drop my jog back to a walk. But even in my strength sessions in the gym, I will just be dropping the weight much, much lower and just focusing on technique and feeling the contraction, as opposed to trying to get any kind of strength gain.
And then the second part of Jordan's question, when you're getting period cramps, so say you're like, no, I do want to do some training, what are kind of the best options if you're getting pain with your period?
I think this comes down to personal preference. I think that a lot of people find that doing low intensity, so it might be some yoga or stretching, can really help. Whereas others, they find that, you know, doing some strength training or some, you know, running or swimming or cycling can be really helpful, because A, it might take their mind off it, but B, also it might make them feel better because they've, you know, they've got out and got some fresh air and done something, and the extra kind of blood flow can really help with the cramps as well. So yeah, I think it comes down to personal preference, that one. But maybe if you have tried all the other things, then maybe trying some low intensity yoga or Pilates or something like that would be a good idea. And then I think really it's about, I would try and figure out why you're getting really bad cramps as well, Jordan, because that doesn't have to be the way that it is. So it might be that your insulin is a little bit high and it's causing a big buildup of endometrial lining, and then your body is having to shed so much more endometrial tissue, which leads to heavy and painful periods. It might be that you have something like endometriosis and you actually need pain medication to help with that, or certain dietary and lifestyle interventions that are going to help with the pain as well. So I'd say do the exercises, but then try and work with someone who can help you to actually address those cramps.
Now, I guess the part that everyone's been waiting for, a lot of people with PCOS don't have regular cycles, or they've got really long cycles. So I guess let's start with, how do you kind of work your training around that when you've got a really long cycle?
Yeah, so I think the kind of the good thing about having a long cycle is, in you're more in that high hormone phase for longer. So you potentially have a longer period of time to, you know, to push it. I would say though that we can't really push it for too long before we should have a deload week. But you're more likely to be able to do that if you need to. So I'd still say maybe every 5 or so weeks have a deload. But if you're getting, I don't know, if you're cycle is 45 days. Okay, then you might have, you know, 4 weeks of high, the high hormone phase, and then you ovulate, and then you have 2 weeks, because generally you get your period about 14 days after you ovulate, between about 11 and 14 days. Mm-hmm. So I'd still, you could have your periodization could be more like 6 weeks. So you do 4 weeks of heavy training, and then 1 week that's a bit more like endurance based, and then you have your deload week.
Mm-hmm.
And see how that goes for you. I think if you're feeling any symptoms of overtraining or getting really tired, you might want to add another deload week in there. So you might split it up and say, okay, do 3 weeks on and then have a deload week, and then I do 3 weeks and have another deload week.
Yeah, and I think also it's important to remember that, like, it doesn't, like, you can have this regime, but it doesn't have to be like super, super strict. So if you are feeling still a bit fatigued, maybe at the beginning of your cycle when you've got your period, it's okay to just, you know, take another break and then kind of go from there. It doesn't have to be super specific. And I think especially if you're not competing, then that's probably,
yeah, totally,
you know, a lot more relevant.
And I think this is, that's a good thing to bring up, is that this doesn't have to be for someone who's competing. I'm certainly not competing at the moment or anymore. And but I still find it really helpful to do this because mostly, as I said, from a mental capacity, I then know with the plan, I go, okay, cool, I know that I can work pretty hard, and then I know that I've got a rest coming up, right? It gives me something to kind of train for, to think, okay, great, like, yay, yeah, it's rest week, and then I go back to a bit more intensity, and then again I'm like, yay, rest week again.
Yeah.
So it gives us a nice structure to that, but it doesn't have to be totally regimented.
Yeah, yeah.
And it still means that we still have to listen for our other symptoms. So maybe you're like feeling really low motivation and you're feeling really weak, and it's only week two and you're like, oh, this can't be right. But it might be that you're getting sick, right?
Yeah.
So, or you're overtraining, right? You're just like actually overtraining. All your stress hormones are way, way, way too high. And you're just really struggling to recover from any exercise at the moment.
Mm.
So still listen to your body as when you're doing this as well.
Mm-hmm. And for those that are on the pill or some other kind of hormonal contraception, that obviously suppresses ovulation. So what does that mean for their training?
Yeah, so pretty much, I mean, the pill, it depends on what contraception you're on, but let's say we're talking about the combined pill. So mm-hmm. this would be the normal pill that you get from your doctor, which would have estrogen and progesterone in it, the synthetic forms. And this would be things like Diane-35, Yaz, Yasmin, like most of them are combined pills, unless you've been told you're on the mini pill, which is just progesterone only. So the combined pill, the way that it works to be a contraceptive is that it actually stops you from ovulating. It blocks the receptors in your brain to stop you from ovulating.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you do not produce the same amount of estrogen and then progesterone than you normally would if you were actually ovulating.
Mm.
So this doesn't really work if you're on hormonal birth control. And the good thing about that, potentially, is that you don't get such a low week the week before your period.
Mm.
Although you still might. So it still might be helpful for you to keep tracking your symptoms. And if you feel you have, you know, really, I think it still would be, it would work for you to still have your deload week that week, because it then, again, it gives you some nice structure to your training, but you might not feel the same symptoms as someone that's not on a hormonal birth control. But probably where it does affect is that you probably won't have the really good feelings in those first 2 weeks that you would if you were producing your own estrogen. And this might be why we have seen in the research that females, especially adolescent females that are on hormonal birth control, do not gain as much muscle mass and strength gains and training gains as what people that are not on hormonal birth control.
Mm.
So it does seem to hinder your ability to drive those improvements, and that's probably because you're not producing that same like high hormone level that's going to help with that.
Mm-hmm.
So interestingly, this is why I think that we need to reframe what we do for young female athletes. So many females, if you've had irregular cycles as a teenager, or and you're an athlete, or you maybe have really heavy cycles, a doctor would often say, I will put you on hormonal birth control and to kind of regulate that cycle.
Mm.
And this might be doing, well, it likely is doing a massive disservice to young female athletes.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know how old you are listening to this podcast, but maybe you have do have a young female in your life who might not be that confident and comfortable talking about their cycle, especially with their, you know, doctor, but maybe there might be, you know, if you kind of talk to them about it, they might be more happy to do that. Mm. And you could say, hey, well, like, what's going on? And you know, and be able to share some knowledge with them about how actually ovulating and getting their period could be a really helpful thing. And actually having their period when they're competing is not the end of the world. It actually could be really helpful for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of young females that are competitive, they want to do well, right? So you kind of want all the improvement and all the natural performance enhancing effects you can get.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
And then for those that have gone into menopause, who are obviously no longer ovulating, kind of similarly, I guess, to the pill or hormonal contraception, like how would you suggest they approach training? And I guess kind of talking about when they're going through perimenopause and then once they've kind of come out the other side.
Mm. So yeah, just to recap for anyone that doesn't know, perimenopause is the years prior. So menopause is when you haven't had a period or haven't ovulated for an entire year. And perimenopause is the years leading up to that where periods tend to get a bit more irregular. So this can happen anytime from 35 onwards, but it's more likely to happen when you're in your 40s or even 50s.
Mm.
So the years before menopause is when periods might get a little bit more irregular, and what tends to happen there is similar to what happens in PCOS, that you have longer phases before you ovulate, and then you might have even shorter phases after you ovulate, much lower progesterone. So it could be, again, I would say if you know when you're ovulating, if you're tracking that, that can be really helpful. You can do the similar thing, really work with your cycle and pre-ovulation and pushing it hard. And then, but you might only have 1 week or maybe 10 days after you've ovulated. And therefore, you might want to take all of that time in your deload week.
Mm-hmm.
So because you might have, you likely have even less hormones than what you did when you were in your, you know, 30s and 20s then.
Mm.
And this is why often you can get a lot of those symptoms, like the, you know, really bad PMS symptoms or hot flushes and things that we would attribute to being menopause, but actually they're more perimenopause symptoms. And then once you then go into menopause, well, that would be the same as the pill. There isn't really a cycle anymore because you're not producing lots of estrogen and lots of progesterone because you're not ovulating anymore. So it'd be more about, you could just build in your own structure around that. So I think still it helps to do sort of 4 weeks on, 1 week off, kind of rhythm to get some kind of structure to your training and make sure you build in those weeks where you have a bit of a rest week as opposed to just, you know, training hard 365 days a year,
throttling yourself,
which leads to overload burning and burnout out. and things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I would say just on more coming back to the types of training. So menopause is more where you don't necessarily need to worry about timing of your cycle because you're not getting a cycle, but it's definitely when you want to really focus on the types of exercise that are going to be helpful for you. So menopause is really the time, if you have never strength trained before, you're really going to want to get into that because it's going to help with a lot of symptoms as you know, and your physiology and your body changes when you're going through menopause.
Because I would like, I guess, for you to talk about a bit more. With perimenopause, obviously, a lot of people get symptoms, like you were saying, the hot flushes and things like that. And they've often, when you're at that age as well, you've got a lot on your plate. You've got a family. You've got most likely a stressful job. So how do people approach that when they're like, I've got so much going on. I feel awful. Training's like one of the last things I want to do. But obviously, I still want to stay fit and healthy. How do you kind of manage all of that?
I think it might be just about most people know that they feel better when they do some exercise, especially with menopause and perimenopause symptoms, is that I think most people agree that they feel much better. So it's about you're really going to have to prioritize that time for yourself. And maybe it's not a full hour training session, but even if it's 20 minutes, right? Even if that's just 20 minutes to get out and go for a brisk walk, jog around the block, or to lock yourself in a cupboard and do, you know, or with like your garage and do a little circuit of just some basic body weight exercises. So some squats and some lunges and some like press ups against the wall and those like move those big muscles. So I'd say sometimes those the snack exercise model, so we think about exercise in terms of not one big meal but in terms of snacks throughout the day, that can be just as effective. And if you're, you know, if you're busy with a family, you might be going and watching them play sport or something. Great. Well, instead of just standing on the sideline, why don't you just walk around the field, right? Like you still get to watch, you still get to be there, but you get to be doing the exercise as well. Or maybe if you're dropping them off at, you know, some other activity, then you use that time to you're going to violin lesson, I'm going for a run. Like, brilliant. Or like just trying to build in that time that you don't have to do everything with your family. And there's a really great relationship. I don't know, she called herself a relationship psychologist? I can't remember. But anyway, her name is Esther Perel, and she's a Flemish woman, but she lives in the US. And she's written the book Mating in Captivity, which is excellent. And she does a really cool podcast called Shall We Begin? And she records her therapy sessions with patients. They, of course, consent.
Yeah.
And it's mostly a couple relationship. Yeah, you know,
that's therapy. So interesting.
Yeah, and one of the things that she said that I thought really resonated with the way that I was brought up was that she was like, no matter what you've got going on and you've got children, you've got to build some time for yourself. Otherwise, you are going to be so burnt out and that you... just, you know, and burnout can happen with parenting and with families as well, is that, and burnout really is the, when you start being disinterested and actually, you know, you find that, and that can, you know, that could be really awful. But she was like, one of the reasons is because we are trying to do everything, you know,
for everyone else.
Yeah. And especially as females, we do so much and we are expected to do so much.
Mm.
And so she was like, why are we expecting that we can be, or as you know, as a parent, we should have to attend every single thing that our children did. She was like, I didn't. When my children had sport on a Saturday morning, I was like, great, you've got your activity, I'm going to go and do my activity. Like she said, I don't know if she said it didn't once, but she said it very rarely would she actually go and watch her children play sport. She was like, because they're doing their activity, I'm doing my activity, and then on the Sunday we then do family things together. And she was like, I'd way rather put the time into us doing things as a family together and shared experiences than me just going and being an inactive participant in their things,
just standing there and watching.
Yeah, so maybe you carve out some time for you when your family are doing their own activities and you go and do your own activity. Because, you know, all of this pressure that, you know, to be a good parent, you have to be there watching is like BS. No,
who made that up?
Yeah. Yeah. Who made that rule? And where are you? Because I'm going to fight you for it.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people think, oh, well, I've just got to like tack it on to the end of my day. But then it's like, how am I going to get 8 hours sleep? And it's just another thing on the to-do list.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really a really good approach.
So I think that it generally is like there are so many things, and I'm sure that there's many parents here or people sitting here listening and be like, oh, Claire, that's not going to work for me because of. It's like, okay, cool. I cannot know your situation in depth, right? You have to be the investigator in your own life and go, cool, well, what I'm doing now isn't working for my symptoms. So then how do I change that? And how do I carve that time out for my day? So maybe is it that I definitely carve out some lunchtime because I'm at work and that's a time that I could go and do a 30-minute workout and still be back at my desk by the end of lunch and get back to work? Or is it that my time is first thing in the morning and everyone else can get themselves ready for school and work and stuff like that? I'm out of there. Like, and really it's just about you have to be the one to come up with the solutions for you. I can give you lots of ideas, but you've got to look at your own life and think about how am I going to fit that in?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And then I think also one thing going back to the training for your cycle is that... it's really important if you are doing some training to really take note of this, because this is one reason why they think, so that if they put a group of females who are getting a menstrual cycle, mm-hmm. who are not on hormonal birth control, and they have a group of males and they're given the same amount of training, then generally it will be the females who get overtrained and injured. And we think that that's because they're trying to push it through that low hormone phase. So it can be really helpful for doing this so that you're not getting injured and overtrained and burnt out, right? And you're still actually enjoying your training and feeling pumped to, you know, to get into the gym or go for a run or do some exercise or do whatever you're doing, whether that be dance class or swimming or whatever you're into. Just keep that motivation and energy there as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Cool. And I think the last question that we had, just one, was from
at Petrie's. I've probably butchered that. But how do you know when you're doing too much or too little? And can you kind of reiterate what a good amount of time for training is for most people?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, this is, again, is very general. And as I said before, it really comes down to your lifestyle and what you can fit in and how you can do it. But if we said 45 minutes a day would be a really good amount of time, or I think the recommendation in the international evidence-based guidelines for PCOS is 150 minutes a week, right? Which is obviously a lot less than 45 minutes a day. So I think if you bank on 150 minutes a week being your non-negotiable minimum
baseline,
I think that's a really good idea. And then I've seen patients doing really well on about 45 minutes five times a week, and splitting that between, you know, a couple of strength sessions and a couple of like more cardio sessions. And the cardio can be just as like a fast walk, really. And in terms of, but I think that when many patients as well come to me when they're completely burnt out, so maybe they've been doing there was someone that asked me, they're like, is Alston asked, thoughts on CrossFit four times a week? It's like, well, cool. So for some people, that might be totally fine. But if you've got completely burnt out adrenals, that could be way too much for you.
Yeah, for sure.
So the rule of thumb that I give is to know how much is too much or too little, or sorry, probably too much for you, is how do you feel after exercise? So if you feel completely fatigued from more than 30 minutes after you've worked out, it's probably too much or too high intensity for you at the moment. So I would say you need to either back the intensity or the duration. Or if it's, you know, you're doing mostly high intensity interval training, then you probably need to find a different form of exercise for the next 3 to 6 months and work on that. So I'd say if you're doing a lot of CrossFit HIIT training, and you know, HIIT training can be anything from like, you know, your grit classes, your Barry's boot camp, your like Peloton cycling stuff as well, lots of those where you're, you know, going hard for a few seconds or minutes and then you have a rest and then go hard again. So that interval kind of training, and that tends to be where I see most people getting burnt out. So it might be that you need to switch from that to doing some strength and cardio. So if you are doing a lot of that kind of exercise, then again, you're probably going to feel good for the first, you know, from day one of your period, for the first two or however long weeks until you ovulate. But then you really might want to reconsider that form of exercise for the second 2 weeks, especially that week before your period. So I'd say that week before your period would be the time where you want to switch up that exercise and instead go and do some, you know, much more low intensity exercise.
Yeah, rather than dragging yourself through the mud trying to thrash yourself in that last part, for sure. And I think it's really important, because I know the question comes up a lot, just to wrap it up, that HIIT is like, is that good or is that bad for PCOS? And none of the exercises that we've talked about here or the types of training we've talked about here are good or bad. It really depends on your situation.
Yeah, totally. It's a really good thing to reiterate. There is no one exercise that's bad for PCOS, right? Like that's... I think that that becomes a lot very, very generalized, especially in social media, where I often see these like good, bad, or silly, smart. And it's like doing some high intensity interval training can be really helpful for some people and really like nice for them. They feel a really endorphin rush, like especially things like CrossFit, you have an amazing community and you feel really good by doing that. But I think it's when, if you also have a lot of other stress in your life, or maybe you're not periodizing your training and you're going balls to the wall CrossFit all four times a week and you haven't had a break for months and months, then yeah, you're likely, your adrenals are likely going to get burnt out. So, but if you could do four CrossFit sessions a week for 3 weeks of your cycle and then have a week off, or especially go hard for 2 weeks, peg it back a little bit for the third week and then have a complete week off where you go and walk and like do some mobility stuff, then I think that would be a really good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but again, going back to Patrid's question, if you are not recovering after that session for 30 minutes or more, then yeah, that whatever you're doing is not, is too much for you at the moment.
And you won't have to necessarily cut it out forever, but it's just understanding that you have to pull it back for a bit until your body's at a stage where it can handle that again.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, so that's it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope that that answered a lot of your questions about training with your cycle and how to do that regardless of how long your cycle is. So remember, from day one of your period, that's going to be until you ovulate, that's going to be when you can achieve your most, like, your strength gains and you're going to feel really good training. And then the week after your period is going to be when you start to want to peg that back a little bit, maybe focus more on endurance than on, you know, strength or power. And then the week before your cycle, that's when you want to be really, week before your period is where you really want to be taking probably a week off or a much lighter week. So if it doesn't matter how long your cycle is, you can still adhere to that. Just if you then know when your period is coming or know when you're ovulating, that can be really helpful, especially if you've got a cycle of, you know, 60-70 days. But if that is you, I'd probably say the most important thing is to try and focus on getting your cycle back towards sort of 35 days or less. And if you want to know how to do that, then that's exactly what we help you with in the PCOS protocol, which is our 12-week program, where we help identify why your cycle is so long. So what's the root cause of that, and then what are the most important changes to make. And some of that could be changing the type of exercise that you're doing. So we've talked a lot about that, and they're tailored to you and that type. So cool. That's all for today. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.